From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, those open lines, and at the end of the show tonight, a visit from the guy from Pittsburgh on Ouija boards. Hey, by the way, those of you in the St. Louis area, Saturday morning, 11:45 a.m. at the St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Church out there on Forest Park Avenue, I will be the honorary chairman of the 99th anniversary of the Greek Festival. We're going to have a great time. Come on out and say hi. Do not get me ouzo. I will not take it. Here's what's happening. Hurricane Hermine may have been downgraded to a tropical storm, but it hit Florida's panhandle with incredible ferocity, leaving more than 170,000 without power in its wake before heading up the eastern seaboard, packing heavy rains for the Labor Day weekend. It is now hitting the Carolinas, where I was last week at our live event. I hope everybody out there is okay. As we've been reporting over the last couple days and now confirm, Samsung has now halted the sales of the Galaxy Note 7 smartphone after finding the batteries of some of those devices exploded while they were being charged. That's not good. The number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits rose less than expected last week, pointing to sustained labor market strength that could push the Federal Reserve closer to rising interest rates. Most of those jobs came in the restaurant sector. Let's check in with investment advisor Catherine Austin Fitz, who heads up the Solari Report. Catherine, well, pretty good news, huh?
Well, I wouldn't get excited yet. unemployment continues to still be slower than what the Fed expected this year. So I think it's a good report, but it's soft for this month, George. And the big test, this is August, and it's Labor Day weekend. I think the big test will be what we see in September in the first 2 weeks. The Fed's going to meet and consider raising the benchmark interest rate in the third week of September. I don't think they know what they're going to do yet.
No, I don't think they know what they're going to do either. Now, leading into the November election, if the economy kind of stays the way it is and it's not that bad, is that going to be a help for the Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton, or not?
If you look at where the economy is now, I don't think it's working in the Democrats' favor.
You don't? Right now, okay.
Especially because of the backlash, because of Obamacare. But, George, if you look at how wild the election is, how high the disapproval ratings of both candidates, and the fact that we are not even in September yet, this could be wild. Anything can happen between now and November.
And what are you doing this Labor Day weekend?
Oh, I'm in Reno. I just drove from Las Vegas, and I'm headed to California on Sunday, so I'll be in Silicon Valley on Labor Day.
All right.
And I'll be working.
You always do, Catherine. Thanks so much. CNN's latest poll of polls finds Hillary Clinton's lead over Donald Trump has been cut in half, with her post-convention bump wilting away in the late summer heat. Clinton holds an average of 42% support to Trump's 37%. This is going to be a close horse race, folks. Authorities in Ohio on alert after a student said a person in a clown mask chased him with a knife. 14-year-old boy in Columbus was walking to the bus stop on his way to the Columbus North International School when a man dressed in all black wearing a clown mask chased him down the street with a knife. Mothers in the neighborhood told the station that they're telling their kids to pay attention, follow their gut. In Kansas, Manhattan High School and the Riley County Health Department, they need parents' help getting conclusive information on the mystery illness that has now affected over 100 students. 18 students were sent home for having stomach-like flu symptoms. The total is now roughly over 100. Tarantulas are out looking for love, and hikers in Southern California, Santa Monica Mountains, are warned to watch out for the little spiders. Tarantula mating season has now begun, and it will last through the end of October. They're all over the place. The giant spiders will spend the next 2 months weaving webs just above the ground outside of the female's burrow, so be careful if you're out in that area. What else is going on these days? Let's look to the skies with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Hey, Peter.
Boy, a lot's going on, George, and I thought for sure you'd probably scoop me on this new news about the SpaceX explosion yesterday on the pad in Cape Canaveral. Have you seen the news about the video footage that has captured that strange object that went over the missile?
Yeah, that was weird. Some people think that something may have shot it down. Who knows?
It's very interesting, and I don't know what to make of it, but I got a call from a very nice gentleman in Davie, Florida yesterday. He's a professional limousine driver. He was reviewing the video on CNN, and how he noticed this, I don't know. I tipped my hat in his direction. He did a great job, but he called me and asked me if I'd seen it, and I was instantly skeptical, as I usually am, but I looked at it, and we had it analyzed by a gentleman who's done some informal photo analysis for us in the past, and he's come up with some very interesting observations, which are posted to our homepage. So if people would like to look at that video of that strange object going one way over the missile just before it explodes, going the other way a few seconds later, they can see it from our website. Well, just a few reports to present tonight. One of the types of reports I like is people who hear UFOs. Not very often do they hear a UFO. And also reports from years and decades ago. I have one that fills both those bills. Back in November of 2004, a woman writes she was home with her two young children in Buckingham County, which is sort of central, that is Virginia, central Virginia. She heard a very strange, very odd sound that appeared to be approaching her house, and it got louder and louder, so loud that it was almost painful to her hearing. She almost didn't dare look out her window, but she did, saw an immense object pass overhead. Well, again, I'm natively skeptical, particularly in the field of ufology, but she writes that she called 911 and the dispatcher informed her that other people had reported the same thing. Why these things can occur or how they can occur and not get reported is a mystery to me, George. I think affairs of human beings are stranger than the affairs of these aliens that I believe are visiting our planet. Well, a little closer to our present date, a sighting just 3 weeks ago tomorrow, August 13th, from the village of Teston, England, in Kent. Some of my forebears used to live there half a millennium ago. And a gentleman was driving to the west through that hamlet, looked out ahead of him to the western sky, saw a very bright light, and slowed down to try to identify what it was, had no strobes on it. So it probably wasn't a main airliner. And what he saw pass over him is, there's a rendition of it on our website, a very interesting, slender, triangular craft with blue panels on it, and it has sort of a cockpit or canopy arrangement on the bottom of it. Last report comes from tonight from Gulfport, Gulfport, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Got a late night report from a husband and wife who were driving to dinner, and they saw a cluster of lights and a big column of smoke. They provided us with a photograph, which I'll have posted within a few days. Didn't have time to do it tonight, but very, very interesting sighting of a cluster of probably 18 or 20 lights positioned very close to the plume of smoke. In any event, I wish you all there at Premier an enjoyable weekend, and same to the Coast listeners, George.
Thank you. You too, Peter. Of course, most of us will be working. We'll be on Sunday night for you, and of course, Labor Day night will be a live program too. You know, that story we've been following, that radio signal that some say might have been from extraterrestrials way out there, well, it was actually from Earth, according to Russian scientists. That's what they've confirmed. News of the strong radio signal detected by a Russian telescope last year caused a buzz this week, but it is not meant to be, at least not yet. You never know. But UFOs They seem to be everywhere. And in a moment, David Sirita joins us, author of the latest book, God's Great Pyramid, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, one of our favorites, David Sirita, with us for a couple hours tonight. We're going to be talking about a lot of things that are going on up there. David's latest work, God's Great Pyramid, as well. We're going to start off by talking with David about UFOs. But first of all, David, happy Labor Day weekend to you, my friend.
You too, George. It's been a long time since I've talked to you, over a year and a half, probably.
That's right. You were on with Jimmy, I think, a couple months ago when he was filling
out. Right, I was, yeah. And, you know, I just contacted the producers recently because there's definitely a mistake about this signal that was detected by the Russian telescope. Actually, the article on SETI's website doesn't say that it was local interference. It says that this Russian Academy of Sciences, Alexander Ipatov, told TASS news sources that he had previously did a survey in the skies looking for extraterrestrial signals, and they thought they had a signal, and it supposedly turned out to be a radio interference from a military satellite. But he's not talking about this instance. They have no evidence of that, and I can definitely disprove that, absolutely, because remember in the movie Contact, and you know, I've read the book.
Great movie.
That big moment, you hear that sound, she's got the headphones on, they got this 100 Janssen.
That wobble sound.
That whopping sound, and it's coming from Vega. And what's interesting is this particular signal we're talking about from the star HD 164595 is so close to Vega optically in the sky. It's kind of beckoning to Carl Sagan's book because this particular star is in the Hercules constellation, which pretty much sits just a couple of thumbs away from Vega. And they're not actually certain the signal came from there. But I'll give you a really simple way to disprove the Russians' idea that this new signal was detected in May 15th, 2015. And the Russians kept it secret for a year. And somebody leaks it to SETI, which means they were never convinced it was a satellite interference because they were interested in it for a whole year. And then it gets on our media, and then suddenly they try to stop it by coming out with this story that supposedly previously they had made a mistake. But the thing about this signal, it came in at 0.75 Jansky. So
now explain that. Like what is that?
Well, see, a Jansky converts to something you'll all understand, which is a watt per meter squared.
Okay.
So you think of like a square box the size of a yard or a meter, and you think of there's only 1 watt of energy in there. But a signal of 0.75 Janskys is so weak, you're not even at a thousandth of a watt yet. You're at a signal that is strong enough to be stronger than the background of space, like this big spike. And there's a picture on your website from the actual graphic and the work that I did on it. There's a video on your website that will completely disprove this idea that this is not an ET signal. And here's the first part. The first part is a satellite transmitting anything that's terrestrial is in the hundreds to thousands of Janskys if you were to convert it. But they measured in watts per meter squared satellite transmissions, right? So there's no way a local Russian satellite would produce a signal that weak is what I'm saying, nowhere near that weak. It would be, in fact, most satellite communication links provide line-of-sight transmission of signals to 1,367 watts per meter square, which would be millions and billions of Janskys. So forget about the idea that this is a satellite mixing up in the sky. And the second thing is, to send, you know how you have this type 1, type 2?
Right, and we're what, a type 1?
We're not even a type 1. But see, they measure that on this idea that in order to send these whopping signals from space, so this particular star is 94.4 light years from Earth, and they're thinking like a cannon, you would have to extract all the energy that we're using on Earth today, and this is from the SETI article, and all the electricity from all the power sources on Earth right now for a very brief moment of time to send a signal
directly like a cannon towards Earth, and the signal gets weaker and weaker and weaker. By the time it gets here, it's stronger than background space radiation, and it shows up as less than a Jansky. So that's one of the theories. But you would have to be a Type 2 civilization, apparently, to do that. And we're not, all our energy use is scattered all over the planet, so we have no way of focusing it. So we know that if they sent the signal from that star directly at us, they knew we were here because it was such a narrow band, such a very high frequency 11 gigahertz band, which is like 2.5 centimeter bandwidth, tiny thing. And they aimed it at us and it decelerated and it hit at Earth. So that's theory number, you know, probably the most likely theory. The other theory is if they sent the signal in all directions, they would have to have this super, super massive amount of energy from equivalent to harnessing the entire, the energy of hundreds of millions of stars. And you would have to be like God to do something like that, right? So what happens is at Princeton University in the year 2000, it's reported this physicist, Lijian Wang, an American-Chinese physicist, breaks the speed of light by sending lasers into cesium, radioactive gas, and his signal goes 300 times the speed of light.
300 times? My God.
300 times the speed of light. And this is, you can Google this and find it all over the internet. And then Raymond Chow at Berkeley, even earlier than that, and I spoke to physicist Raymond Chow at Berkeley after, in all these physics magazines, it came out that he was sending lasers through basically crystal, to certain materials, crystalline materials. And I'm even doing this now. Like I have these new devices on my website where you can send a laser, high-quality laser, through a ruby or a sapphire, and you can actually generate some real tachyon faster-than-light energies for your body. But this idea, I phoned Raymond Chow when the news broke, and you know, because I knew a lot of his, you know, I knew Glenn Seaborg and Bogdan Magwitch and many top physicists. So we had a conversation, and he said he didn't really understand what was happening, but he said what they do know is that the material that the laser is going through was compressing the wave so small that it eventually went faster than light. And that's the same thing that happened years later at Princeton with Lijian Wang, and all this stuff goes black. You never hear about it. 17 years later, nobody knows what they're doing at this secret lab at Princeton University with these faster-than-light signals. But here's the part that's stunning in comparison to the signal coming in. The part that's stunning is the part that goes, see, imagine the Great Pyramid. And I'm saying the Great Pyramid is a giant crystal oscillator that compresses waves at the top, that point at the top. And this huge amplitude of wave coming through the pyramid is compressing, and it goes faster than light through the top. Well, that's actually exactly what's happening on a molecular scale in both Raymond Chow's and Lijian Wang's experiments on a tiny, tiny scale. But the amount of energy required to go faster than light at the compressed level is so tiny. It's so incredibly small that this whole idea that a civilization, it needs to be type 1 or type 2 or type 3 to send these huge signals is absolutely ludicrous, because it would only, because those signals have to be so massive, because the farther they go across the universe to get here, they're running into stuff, bounce and crashing into things, right? And then the signal gets weaker and weaker and weaker. And then by the time it gets here, it's like the size of a pea, right? But a quantum signal of a wave compressed signal, what both Raymond Chow and Lijian Wang discovered is, imagine this flight of birds in a V shape or a pyramid, right? And that's your massive energy wave flying through the universe, but only the bird at the head of the wave gets here.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you find,
and the rest
is,
kind of scatters out or what?
It's kind of like a semi-truck going down the highway, blowing a lot of air along, but then you find out if you have a dart, like a thin spear, it cuts through the resistance and it gets there much faster, and you don't need this huge semi-truck. So all that wasted energy that they're talking about in type 2 and 3 civilizations is the semi-truck. But the quantum signal is so small, that actually goes way faster than light. This signal could have been sent from this star, and this star is right above us right now.
When might it have been sent, if it was sent?
Well, if it was faster than light, it might have been sent, you know, even days or weeks before it arrives.
All right, well, that's pretty fast. David, hold on. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk more about your thoughts on this signal. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We'll take calls next hour with David Sirita. David, so this signal, do you believe that it was sent intentionally or was merely picked up by us?
No, I think I can prove that it's intentional, and there's a video link on your website at coasttocoastam.com that will show you actually proof that it was harmonic and intentional. And what I did is there's actually a graphic from the Russian Raton 600 radio telescope that shows an image of the waveform of the signal. And on this image, you can see these lines bouncing up and down like the stock market. And then you see this huge spike, the 0.75 Jansky spike. And inside of this spike, I mean, remember in the movie Contact, you know, the guy's listening and he says, I can hear structure in there. And that means there's some intelligence to this signal. Well, what I did is I blew it up to this scale, and I took measurements with a ruler from the peak to valley jagged edges going up and the peak to valley jagged edges going down. And then what I did is I got on the left side going up 780 millimeter, 530 millimeters is the next spike, 390 is the next spike, and then going down 230, 520, 600, and 680. Now here's what's interesting about a graphic model is that it doesn't matter how big or small I make this graphic, the ratio between those wave spikes will never change. Whether I'm measuring in inches or millimeters or fractions of an inch, it doesn't matter. Ratio is a universal mathematical language. That's how ETs would communicate, through ratio or frequency. Frequency and ratio do not change whether you're using alien feet, human feet, metric, it doesn't matter. Measurements change, but ratio and frequency are the universal language, so ETs would use that language. So I was looking at the ratios, and then I convert these numbers and ratios to musical tones in this video, and I want to see if they're harmonic. And knowing that in tone testing, our current music scale designed by Pythagoras and Kepler, that our music scale distorts between the tones of A, B, C, D, F, G, and the flats and sharps, and so does the famous 432 scale distorts, the 444 scale distorts. And what distortion sounds like is when you play one tone and the next, you're going to hear a wobble, which is your distortion. But when I play these tones from this signal from space, they're perfect. No distortion on the wave going up with those three tones, and you can hear it in the video. And then I stop, and then I play the tones going down, which is four different tones, and they're beautiful. No distortion between the notes. And I was just flabbergasted, astounded. I said, how the heck could this be a human signal when humans don't even know how to design ratios this perfect and this harmonic? And what I found, you know, in my book, in my wife's book, God's Great Pyramid, is when I took measurements in the Great Pyramid and converted them to sound, they produced the most sophisticated, low distortion, perfect sounding music scale in existence. Far more perfect than our current music scale. And so what does that mean going back to this ET signal? It means that this thing was designed with ratios that are beyond the comprehension of the entire music scale and all the music scales on the planet today. So how could this be of an origin from a Russian satellite? No way, no way. And when you watch this video and you hear this, you have to understand that you can put, you take a tone generator, and, you know, think of the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind and the little boys playing the xylophone, and how they convert those tones to numbers, and then they correspond to Devil's Tower, Wyoming, coordinates on the longitude and the latitude. You see, ratios and numbers are basically a language. And the language, actually the ratio on the right side going down is ratios of 1 to 1.1 and 1 to 2.2. And to give you an example, our music scale, an octave, is times 2. So they're showing a ratio of 1 2.2 and 1.1. So they're showing examples of harmonic shifts that we don't use on our planet, in our music scale, that work perfectly in a harmonic sense. And they're not also golden ratio, Fibonacci ratios. And so we know that, that in our nature, in our natural world, you can see golden ratio numbers. And golden ratio numbers converted to tones are nearly perfect. They're actually way more perfect than our music scale. And I have a video on my YouTube channel called The Scale of Life, which people can see at Spaceman 99 David Street on
so
YouTube.
What, David, what do you think, though, the purpose of this was?
Well, see, what is the purpose? Like, you know, exactly. Like, think of the movie. I mean, I read Carl Sagan's book, and it's far better than the movie. I mean, the book is so much different in a lot of ways. But the purpose is to find out if we're alone in the universe, and if there's anybody out there, can you hear me? Because you live in this galaxy is so much bigger than the ancient, even the Romans. If you go to the time of the Romans and all the pagan gods and goddesses, I mean, they couldn't have painted a picture of the heavens as big as a galaxy. And the fact that there's countless billions of galaxies at this point that Hubble is finding, is there anybody out there? Can you hear me? So you're on this star. And the other interesting thing about this star, George, that I'm really excited about is its mass is 99% plus or minus 3%, the same as our sun. And it means its mass is a twin, which means its energy is a twin, which means in Einstein physics, if any two systems have the same wave function and the same mass and energy, they are quantumly in contact, which means faster than light communication exists between those two suns. I mean, most stars out there, you can't find, and I've actually done so much math in the last 10 years, calculating frequencies of this Palladian sun and the Sirian sun and the Alpha Centauri suns, and you'll never see two suns that are the same mass and size and same radius, because, you know, NASA can determine the radius of hundreds and hundreds of different stars out there.
Even if you have twin stars?
What's that?
Even if you have twin stars?
Even if you have twin stars, those two stars will not be the same size, all right. Which means they're all different frequencies. So you take the Tesla-Schumann resonance, the frequency of the Earth at the equator, although Tesla didn't measure it at the equator, he got 7.83 hertz. So you take the speed of light divided by the circumference of the Earth or where you're standing, and you'll get roughly the frequency of that part of the Earth. At the equator, it's like just under 7.5 hertz. So therefore, every star, every planet, every point in the universe has its own frequency. But whenever any two points are at the same frequency, that's how we're talking on the radio right now. So everybody's receivers are tuned to the same frequency as the transmitter. But when you have two suns with those huge amplitudes of energy, it's so rare to see two suns that are this close. Although their sun is the sun we're talking about, where the signal is from, is just a little bit younger than us. Like, we're 4.6 billion years old, they're 4.5. I can't remember. It's either the inverse of that. There's just a little bit of difference between our ages, but it's the same mass. They don't have the radius. If they had the radius, I could calculate the frequency of that star versus our star. But what is astounding is these shelves in this wave structure are harmonic. Now, in the video, when I play the left side going up, and this is like a 2.5 second spike, then it's perfectly harmonic, and the wave down separate is perfectly harmonic. But when I mix the two together, left and right, you'll hear a wobble, meaning distortion. And what that tells you is the signal going up and the signal going down are separately perfectly harmonic, and they didn't exist on top of each other. But if I mix them on top of each other, there's a distortion, wobble, or difference.
Is there a message in the signal, or is
it? Well, see, this is where it gets much more interesting. The fact that we have a harmonic here tells us that there could be a message, and I think the Russians are onto this, and I think that's one of the reasons the Russian media put out this story that this other astronomer tried looking one time, and he thought
to get us from looking at it, probably.
and it was a satellite, but there's no way you'd mix up a satellite and a space signal, because satellites transmit, you know, we would pick them up in watts per meter squared, and you don't, a Jansky is way, way lower than that. I mean, way, they're not even in the same ballpark. So is there information in the signal? What, the way radio works is you take, like, AM radio is amplitude modulation, and FM is frequency modulation. And what that means is you take a magnet, you take a microphone, and you're talking, and it's sending vibrations into this magnet and this coil and the microphone. Those pulses then get pulse modulated on the amplitude line in AM radio, and they, as information, it rides the... Your voice is less than the speed of light, like it's 700 miles an hour at speed level, but yet it, like a passenger on a train, it jumps on an electromagnetic wave, travels at the speed of light, and then it gets received, and then you convert it through a speaker, and we're hearing the voice. On FM, which is frequency modulation, it's much higher frequency than AM radio, you're modulating at that frequency. So these ETs could effectively have pulse modulated a message inside of these little shelves. And as I look right now at the graphic right in front of me, there are lots of little pulses in between the major spikes that I'm measuring, and that could be modulation. It could be. I mean, the Russians are smart enough to know this, and there may be a reason they kept this from us for a whole year plus. But what's interesting about the timing of when this hit the media is this star at 8 o'clock at night is straight over your head, you know, if you live in the Pacific. You know, I mean, I'm up in, my wife and children are up in Nelson, British Columbia area, right across the Washington border, and you're just straight down. Are you in Los Angeles right now? Or
I'm in St. Louis, Steve.
You're in St. Louis, so it might be further to the west to you right now. I mean, this is late at night. But this star system, I mean, is so close to Vega optically. And
That's again, strange all by itself.
It's strange all by itself. It's like Carl Sagan. Is he doing this? I mean, is where he's from right now doing this? But I can tell you, looking at all the data, I mean, you know, media theories be damned. Just look at the data. That's what my friend Boyd Bushman would say. He says, you know, follow the data, theory be damned. The data says that there's no way that they could produce a perfect harmonic ratio between these shelves if this wasn't intelligently designed. And whether that intelligence is a god or a goddess or some super being.
Or evil.
Or who knows?
Who knows?
We don't know anything about it. But all we know is the media is not smart enough to look at the data correctly. I don't even think Seth... I sent this to Seth Shostak, and of course I wouldn't get an answer back from him.
I had Seth on last night. I wish I had known that you had sent it, because I would have approach that to him.
Yeah, I mean, ratio, any mathematician knows, like, it doesn't matter how, let's I take my graphic, you know, I got 780, 530, and 390 millimeters on the left-hand side. Let's say I blow that up 100 times. The ratio, it's not going to change, and it doesn't matter if I convert it to a different unit of measure, the ratio does not change. So, you know, in the movie Contact, which is really Carl Sagan's book, which is a masterpiece book, and the ending just blows
away. Oh,
yeah.
I mean, if people haven't seen the movie or read the book.
In the book, they merely stop at Vega, and then they go, there's several of them, it's not just Jodie Foster, and they go to the middle of the black hole in the center of the singularity of the Milky Way galaxy, and they're getting the answers to how instant communication can happen anywhere inside of
the
galaxy.
Well, do you think Sagan, when he wrote that book and used the Vega star system, knew something? Or did he just luck out?
The guy was incredible. I mean, I grew up with him. I was born in 61, watched his series on TV going to high school. And there's something mystical about him aside from him maybe not believing in UFOs.
Right. I mean, he believed in life out there in outer space, intelligent life, but he didn't believe that it was visiting us.
No, I think he did. I mean, when you see the end of his book and how they get this secret math formula in both in prime numbers and pi, you know, the formula pi, 3.14, and da-da-da, all the decimal numbers,
and
he believes
there's
an answer that is there in the mathematics. And I believe, just like these faster-than-light experiments, that a primitive understanding of mathematics and energy would say, yeah, you would need a cannon. Like a Type 3 civilization on this Russian scale that was invented years ago that also Michio Kaku always refers to.
Let me read the definition of a Type 3, David. Civilization that can control energy on the scale of its entire host galaxy.
Its entire host galaxy. You see, you need, even to create an Einstein-Rosenbridge wormhole, you need the negative energy of 100 million suns just to put a quarter through the wormhole. The bigger the quarter gets, then you need more galaxies' suns. So the reason they're saying a Type 3 has to harness all these different galaxies is because they're thinking in terms of mass and energy. But when a UFO shows up, one of the reasons mainstream scientists don't believe they're real is they don't see any massive whopping signal anywhere. There's no radio telescope picking up this huge signal. And I've been saying this for years on your show. I mean, I've been on Coast to Coast for 17 years now, time to time. And I've been saying that all the evidence I've seen in the NASA UFO evidence shows that they use a wave transformation to reduce the mass of their spacecraft to zero. And once there's zero mass, the energy required to go the speed of light is tiny. And then if you were to go quantum level beyond the speed of light, well, it's still tiny amounts of energy. It's more about using energy to convert mass to reduce the mass gravity effect to zero. And Bushman and my meetings with him absolutely agreed. There's no way in the world, and Einstein's correct, you can't get mass to go that fast without this huge whopping energy signal. So when UFOs show up everywhere, and Peter Davenport was just on talking about this craft coming in, possible craft or possible just light craft coming in and doing something to this. Was it a Facebook missile launch or what was that?
Facebook owned the satellite and SpaceX was going to send it up into space.
Right, SpaceX and Elon Musk and those guys. So the thing blows up and maybe it's ET showing you just stop the rockets, you guys. You got to get past this. You're never going to grow up. And Elon Musk, I've been in the same room with him at a party in Bel Air, and you know we should have talked, but it's hard to get that guy to understand that there's a whole other way to do this, to get spacecraft to move. And so I think there's a whole other understanding. You got to get rid of these scales of this ludicrous amount of energy, harnessing the energy of all your host galaxies to be a Type 3, because there's no evidence of any UFOs harnessing all that energy because they couldn't exist in our space. They would destroy us with their energy field of their craft, right? Because we couldn't even handle that much energy. It would burn out our sun and fry us all. And that's not what's happening. These UFOs are doing it a different way. And they're communicating. I mean, how many listeners tonight have had a real bona fide ET, you know, glowing with light or not, right in front of them? And how did they get there, and how are they having that experience? Because they're not doing it this way. They're doing it a completely different way. And we do know from the experiment of Lijun Wang at Princeton and the one of Raymond Chow at Berkeley that wave compression, which is what a pyramid-shaped crystal oscillator does, is the secret to getting signals to go faster than light with very small amounts.
Are they traveling, David, the same way they send signals?
No, not the way we think they're sending signals. No, I don't believe they even move through the fabric of space. I believe just like a fish has to get out of water to get anywhere fast, we have to get out of space. And we can't even imagine what it means to get out of space because we're in space. So you're a fish underwater, and you're like, how do I get out of here? You know, I just got this tail. I don't know how to do it.
Without getting a hook in its mouth.
That's what I've been trying to do lately.
Hold on, David. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with the final hour with you. We're going to take some phone calls. And I also understand you've developed your own technology to communicate with them. We'll talk about that, too.